Hello, everybody. Welcome to Health Chatter. We all took a little bit of a break from Health Chatter, and so now we have an incredibly interesting show in line for all of you today. We're going to be talking about organ transplant and some, whether you think it's good, bad, or different, the political complexities that are facing this subject matter. We've got two really great guests. We'll get to them in a moment. We've got a wonderful second to none crew that helps us with all our shows from day one. Maddie Levine Wolf, Aaron Collins, Deandra Howard, Matthew Campbell, and Sheridan Nygaard. Some are live out of town, Chicago, and in Denver, but they're still connected with us. And so thank you to all of you. You're really, really super colleagues. Clarence Jones is my partner in Health Chatter podcast. Thank you, Clarence. And we chat a lot even during the week. So thanks for being with us. Barry Baines is our medical advisor and provides some medical perspectives on many of the shows that we have. So thanks to you guys as well. Human Partnership is our sponsor for Health Chatter. Wonderful community health organization. They do incredible things in the community. And I highly recommend that if you have just a moment, check out their website and all the different things they do. As a matter of fact, I'm sure if you wanted to even get involved, you could through a Human Partnership. You can check them out at humanpartnershipalliance.org. And of course, you can check us out, all the different shows that we've done on Health Chatter. You could check us out at healthchatterpodcast.com. All the shows are transcribed, and also the background research for all the shows is provided on our website. So check us out as well. So today, organ procurement, organ transplants, and the political complexities. So, Clarence, take it away. I'll let you introduce our great guests.
You know, I'm honored to. I'm always honored when I have the opportunity to talk about life source. I always say that, and this is a disclaimer. Life source is one of the greatest partners that we've had with Human in terms of the very difficult conversations that we've had to have in community about health issues and chronic diseases and those kinds of things. They've always been. Again, they've always been a great source for us in terms of accurate and appropriate information. But my friend Susan Mel Larson, who I've known, I always like to say I've known her for two centuries, for the 20th and the 21st century. But we'll let that go. She is the chief administrative officer for LifeSource, and then Sarah Son, who is the director of communication. Life Source, and who has been able to provide us with a lot of great information and work for the community around this particular topic. So what I wanted to do was to allow them to introduce themselves and then frame the conversation. And then what Sam and I and Barry will do is we'll begin to ask them some questions. So ladies, your turn.
Great. Well, thank you, Stan. Thank you, Clarence, so much for having us. This is such an important topic, and Susan and I have been with LifeSource for many, many years and are so passionate about the work that we get to do. So we're here today to talk about organ donation and organ transplantation. It's such a unique area of medicine. If you think about it, transplant, you have to wait for someone else to give the gift of life. You can't just schedule a transplant. You can't, you know, go in and get a heart transplant, you know, on a day that you choose. You have to wait for a heart to be available. So it's such a community-oriented process. And that's really what we're here to talk to you about today is what the process is and how everyone can support it. So organ donation, there's a huge need in our community. About 2,300 people, 23 of our friends and neighbors are waiting for a life-saving transplant. As you know, the mom of two kids, you know, I think about this often. If one of my children needed a transplant, I would hope the community was checking that box and signing up so that a heart or some other organ would be available for them. However, only about 55% of people are registered organ donors right now in Minnesota, and that number is declining. So, and unfortunately, that's due to misinformation. So I'm excited for this opportunity to really get into that detail and talk about, some of those facts and some of that information that might be preventing people from saying yes.
So let me ask this question. It's kind of like, you say that, people should sign up. And, only what, 55% of those that say that they support it do. So first of all, let's make sure that our listening audience is clear. Where do you sign up?
Sure. Well, in Minnesota, there are a lot of ways. That's something Susan's led a lot of this work is finding different ways, convenient ways for people to register as an organ donor. So the most common way, of course, is to register on your driver's license. About 90% of people do that when you get your first license. Remember that time when you were 16 and got your first license, or just when you renew your license every 4 years in Minnesota. We were also the first in the country to add it to the hunting and fishing license. So that's an easy way to do it. And obviously, hunting season is starting here, so that's a good opportunity. You can also do it on the iPhone Health app or online at life-source.org.
Wonderful,
Yeah, I
wonderful.
want to ask a question. I know that you again, we'll go back to that 55% people that have signed up, but the majority, I understand the majority of Americans are in favor of organ and tissue donation, and yet we only have 55%, that have signed up. So can you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, what are some of the issues, the barriers, or the thoughts that people are having?
Yeah, great question, Clarence. According to studies, over 90% of people say that they support organ donation. However, obviously much fewer are actually registered and have taken that step. So I think it is a lot of myths and information, misinformation. Some of the things that come up often, my team does a lot of work out in the community. We also partner with DMV staff so they can answer basic questions and, some simple ones. People think they're too old. Nobody's going to want mine. We hear that a lot. And that's actually not true. The oldest organ donor was 98 years old. So you
Wow.
can be much later in life and still give and still help others. So our message really is let the doctors decide, check that box, and you'll be evaluated, at the end of your life what you can give to others. And then tissue donation, people have donated tissue, bone, things like that well into their hundreds. So don't rule yourself out. Check that box. Another big one is, I am not healthy enough. Maybe you had cancer in the past or didn't eat well, in your younger years. That again, that stuff, medical advances, that none of that precludes you from being a donor. There's so many innovations that have happened to allow doctors to really, enhance the health of organs and use organs that, maybe that we couldn't use 20 years ago. So again, check that box. Don't rule yourself out.
So, Susan, I want to ask you a question. I know you are the chief administration officer at LifeSource, but you have done a lot. I mean, I kind of joked about our journey because I am a community member, and I'm dealing with a very, very clinical, medical kind of organization. Why don't you talk about your journey with community in terms of your engagement? Because I think that a lot of times people don't necessarily see the connection and why it's so important for us to be talking about this topic.
Yeah.
Why we're good partners in talking about this particular topic.
Yeah. Thank you, Clarence. And as you said, we've known each other over 2 centuries, and it's truly been one of the honors of my career to be your friend and your colleague. So we started really at LifeSource over 20 years ago talking about how do we make sure that we are fully an inclusive organization and that we are meeting the community where they need. And we know that there is a lower rate of support for donation among some communities, in particular the African American and the Native American communities. And so, Clarence, you and I started talking over 20 years ago. What can we do? How can we fully engage? How can we as an organization listen and support the community? And we started with some federal grants, some federal support to do some engagement, to do outreach in schools and in churches. And in particular, and I'm very proud of the work we did with the barbers. in Minneapolis and the surrounding area, where we were able to work directly with these community leaders, barbers, provide them information about donations so that they could provide that for their clients. And what was really key was not only information about donation, but about health issues like high blood pressure and kidney disease and other things that might lead to needing a transplant. You know, at LifeSource, we're working so hard to make sure that we reach a day where no one dies waiting for a transplant. But really, wouldn't it be great if nobody, you know, someone's always going to need, but if we could prevent some of those health conditions that lead to that need for transplant as well. So if we could, we've been working together to really improve the health of the community. I will also say, gosh, I'm losing track. 12 years ago, I think LifeSource moved to North Minneapolis. That's where our headquarters is. And we did that very intentionally so we could open our doors and welcome the community and be very transparent about here's who we are, here's how donation works. And we could be fully collaborative with organizations like HUMAN and others in the community.
So let me ask this. It's like let's help our audience understand the process a little bit. All right. So it's like, all right, somebody, let's just start by saying somebody needs a kidney. Let's just start there. Okay, now what?
Yeah, great question. And kidney, the need for kidneys is really high, about 80% of that wait list. So, like I said, around 2,300 people in our area, over 100,000 nationally are waiting for an organ transplant, and about 80% are for kidneys. So, if you find yourself in need of a kidney and you get listed at a local transplant center, you know, then essentially you're waiting. You're waiting for that call. You know, we hear about the call all the time. And I'm really going to explain the process from the organ donation side, which is what LifeSource, the process that LifeSource manages. So, LifeSource is the only one allowed to do this work in our region. And we have partnerships with all hospitals across the three states that we serve. So, hospitals, once they've done everything possible to save a patient's life, but the patient has experienced a non-survival injury, then they call us. And they share some information about the patient, and LifeSource evaluates that patient to see if they might have the opportunity to donate and help others and save lives. One person can save up to 8 lives through organ donation, and then hundreds after that through tissue donation and bone and other things like that. So the process then begins of LifeSource evaluating the patient. If there is donation potential or we think there might be, we meet with the family. Either we let the family know that their loved one has checked that box and has chosen to be a donor and wants to save lives, or if they haven't, then we talk to the family and give them the information that they need to make the decision about whether their loved one will go on to save lives. After that step, then we start the matching process and the medical evaluation, looking for we run the match list for each organ to see who meets the criteria. It might be someone local, it could be someone, you know, in another part of the country. There's a host of criteria that we're looking at. Once matches are made, then we coordinate with the surgeons who will come and recover the organs. And then we support the family, you know, through this process and in the months and years to come after that. So we support the family with information about who their loved one saved. We host a lot of events to honor donors. We've got a beautiful wall here at our office in North Minneapolis. So we're really with these families every step of the way, supporting them. And I will say that's a really unique thing. You know, I almost feel sad for families who lose a loved one and don't have someone from LifeSource to help them through the process. A lot of our staff are former chaplains, social workers, so they really can help guide through, you know, grief and loss beyond just the organ donation process.
So why just kidneys? Why, I mean, not just kidneys, but why are most of these kidneys? Are we seeing organ procurement and transplants for kidneys? What's the story here?
Yeah, great question, Stan. So kidney disease is so prevalent, and so that's, you know, a big contributor to the need for kidneys. And you know, is also part of the reason that the wait list is about 60% people of color. Susan, anything else you would add about why kidneys are such a big piece of the wait
Let me
list?
jump in real quick. Can I jump in real quick?
Please.
That has been probably one of the biggest conversations that we've had in our community. In fact, we recently honored a guy who lost his eyesight and his kidneys as a result of drinking soda pop and Kool-Aid. He was so moved by that experience and impacted by that experience. He actually created a water brand, which we take out to the community, which is called It's Just Water. So I think that you know, when we're talking about this particular topic, there are people that have been the things that they have consumed are some of the things that are causing them to have the need for kidney. So I just wanted to throw that in there because I think that it's so important to say that it is a big issue and it has something that we need to be talking about. So Susan, I'm sorry, your turn. I'm
No,
sorry, Gary.
if I could maybe just weigh in a little bit on you know on that why kidney transplants is the number one area. Part of it is that over the years, remember dialysis when that came on quite a number of decades ago, people in kidney failure, they were you know this was you know predates really organ transplantation, and so dialysis was always a way to keep people alive. And then when transplants came online to be kind of standard of care, your results are much better if you can get a kidney. I had one of my best friends actually was on dialysis and then had to wait a number of years, and then he got a kidney, and his kidney only lasted 20 years. And then he had to go back on dialysis again, and then he died waiting, you know, for for another kidney. And the reason why, and you know, please, Susan and Sarah, you could, you know, weigh in on this as well, is our population is living older, and some of the biggest things that cause kidney failure are high blood pressure, hypertension, and diabetes, long-standing diabetes, and that those chronic diseases. As we know from other Health Chatter episodes, really do impact communities of color disproportionately, I would say. And with that, there's so that just lays some groundwork there. And one of the other issues I did want to just say that I would hear from patients had concerns. Well, were two things. Number one, if I say I'm a donor, I want to donate my organs, and I have it on my driver's license, and I can't speak for myself, but if I have that on there, can anyone change that and say, no, I don't want Barry to donate, you know, his organs, even though he said he wanted to. And so I'd like it, you know, that legal issue for getting compliance. And then the other thing was just in a, you know, in an examining room conversation. Some patients, not very many, but you know, do register a concern. Well, if I am an organ donor, is that going to impact the kind of care I get if I am critically ill? And I would always do my best to say, you know, that you're center stage when that happens. This isn't like trying to harvest organs, you know, from people. But it's a worry, and I think it all comes down to, you know, trust. Which is a big issue as well. So I just wanted to weigh in on those few things and invite either pushback or confirmation or other things that seem to be barriers. Because for me, removing barriers so that people are ready. Because even if you are a donor, you know, the process to get that organ for someone who, you know, is a match. It's not like, oh yeah, okay, well, I'm an organ donor, and then poof, it happens. It's very, very complicated process that's fraught with a lot of issues to make it a successful organ donation.
So let me, so it seems to me that there's like these steps, and maybe you guys can react to this a little bit. So our great research group put together, so it seems, all right, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, it starts out with a need. There is a need. You need a kidney. We'll just use that as the illustration. And then you start getting into the idea of matching and allocation, and then preservation of that organ, if indeed it turns out it could be it is a match, and then transportation, and then implanting it and then follow up. So talk to us about this whole process, all these steps that are involved.
Yeah, thank you. I think, you touched on something that's so important is, this is really, I always think donation's the best in humanity. It's really about one person giving to another, and somebody they don't know. But to make all that happen is incredibly complex. And
Yeah.
I just touch on a few points in that process that we talked about. First, I'm going to go to what Barry talked about of if you're registered and what does that mean? And can someone's family overturn that? And I think that's a really important part of the process and the legal framework. So what our state law, actually every state law says is that first of all, donation's a gift. And second of all, if somebody is registered, that's legal authorization for donation. They have authorized it the same way, your will is. Maybe I've said if I have any money left when I die, Sarah gets it all. Well, then she does. Clarence, you don't get it, right? That's sort of similar to that process. And we work every day to really respect and honor those decisions. When the donor can't speak for themselves, we know that that's a responsibility we have to speak for them. And if the family doesn't support that, we are really, really intentional about working with the family, communicating with them, providing care and support, explaining it, and helping them through that whole process and honoring their loved one's gift. So I think that Barry touched on that. That's a really important part of the process that really everybody should know. And just we want them to know if you are registered, we will do everything we can to make sure that that decision is fulfilled.
So, are you linked? Are all the organizations like LifeSource around the country, are they linked with like organizations internationally, or do we only deal
Oh.
with what's going on in the United States?
Wow, great question. So for organ donation, we're what's called an organ procurement organization. We're regulated by the federal government, but we're not a government agency. And there are 55 of us, and we each are responsible for a designated service area. So there's no competition. There shouldn't be competition for organs. But we do talk to each other every day. I mean, it's entirely possible we have a donor in Minneapolis. Maybe one organ's going to go to Rochester, but another's going to go to Chicago, and maybe yet another is going to go to Texas. So we're always in communication with each other every day. It's really an amazing network of collaboration, and it was built that way intentionally. So organ donation, I think there's been very rare instances where maybe we've shared kidneys or something with Canada when there's no recipient in the United States, but that's extremely rare. Tissue and eye donation is more international. We've really met the need for cornea donation in this country. And so, of course, if corneas are donated, they go to someone in the United States first. But if there's not a recipient and we still have that gift, then it will go internationally, so that it can help another person to see.
So you are linked with like organizations internationally for certain organs.
Well,
If
for
I'm hearing
tissue,
right.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
And I
tissue.
will go through different organizations and different steps in the process. And
Gotcha.
Susan, I'd also add that, the United States is, along with Spain, the two top organ donation and procurement systems in the world. So we're often sharing best practices, teaching to other countries, really wanting to help elevate the programs and the systems in other parts of the world. So that's really, I'd say, where we collaborate most is sharing learnings.
I want to ask a question now because I think, this has really been great, a lot of great information. But, recently there's been some real challenges when it comes to the conversation around organ and tissue donation. And we recognize the importance of it, but we also recognize the challenges that happen when there is some misinformation, bad news, whatever. So I know that you're regulated by the government. And the government is always inspecting and checking those kinds of things. And recently, there was a inspection that was not so good for the with one of the organizations. So could you talk about that? I mean, because I think that a lot of times people think like, you know, you just got a free hand, you just do whatever you want to do, but it's not like that. And so, you know, you have there's certain kind of you have to be in compliance with some things. But anyway, so we know that this is a tough topic, but we got to talk about it. All right, so let's talk about these recent challenges with the organ and tissue procurement organizations.
Yeah, thank you. Like you said, we're a nonprofit organization, but we're heavily regulated by the government, particularly Health and Human Services. And they have been working really intentionally over the past 5 years to say, how can we improve the system further so that we can save more lives through transplantation? And that's fantastic. That's a noble cause and something that we are all behind. And as they've been doing that, they've been really looking at different areas of the system, the organ procurement organizations, the transplant system, and making a lot of changes. So one of the things that Health and Human Services did very recently, Clarence, that you're referencing, is they decertified the organ donation agency serving Southern Florida. So they're based in Miami. They've had some concerns reported about the quality of care that they're giving. And so they made the decision to decertify them. That has never happened before. So they're really being bold in their actions. And we're all kind of working through this and what does this mean, especially for the 7 million people in Miami and that area of Florida. I mean, Sarah and I really want you to hear that what you are reading about that organization or others in the country where there's concerns doesn't reflect what we do here in Minnesota. I'm just so proud of our organization. Our team is very, very intentional about not only following every regulation as a baseline, that's what we have to do, but operating with integrity and care at every step in the process. We have great hospital partners. We have a highly skilled team that's doing this work every single day. However, again, that happened in Miami, and so that narrative is out there, and we know that that contributes to people questioning the system and questioning if they can trust the system. And so again, I really want you to hear me say I've been doing this work a long time and I'm just so proud. I was at the hospital last week while we had an organ donor and watching our team in action care for the emotional needs of the family, as well as the clinical process of the donor to make sure their gifts were received was just a beautiful thing to see.
So I have a cousin who actually lives in Florida, and she's waiting for a kidney. And she's had some ups and downs with her health. So, and this is a clarification I think our listening audience needs to know. You're put on a list. I mean, this is how I understand it, so correct me if I'm wrong. You're put on a list based on your need. Okay. Then, do you go off the list if all of a sudden some other health issue comes up? And so, do you go to the low end of the list? What helps you to maintain your level at a high level so that you can get at a kidney? Because I'm assuming that these people can get sicker easier. And so consequently, do you constantly go up and down on the list?
Sure, I'll take that, and Sarah, you can jump in. So, you know, it's interesting. It's not really a list, it's a database of everybody waiting. And then when there's a donor, we get a list of who should receive the organ based on first, is it a medical match? Who's waited the longest? How sick are they? So you want to give transplants to the sickest first.
Okay.
What happens sometimes is maybe we have an organ and then there's a recipient who's a match, and we tell the transplant center, this is for your recipient. And they say, today, my recipient is too sick to go through surgery. Maybe they got COVID this morning or something else is happening. So they don't go off the list, but they're not going to get that organ. Then we will go down to the next person on the list and work through it that way. So that's kind of how that works. Now it's up to the transplant center. If they said to your cousin, boy, you're really too sick, we're going to pause for a while, they may decide to do that. But generally, They're on that list waiting and making, waiting for the donor that is the right match for them at the right time. Geography does play a role, less so in kidney, more so in like hearts and lungs, because we don't have a lot of time. And so we start, it's like a target. We start who's within 250 miles of where the donor is. No, if there's no recipient, then we'll go out further. So geography does have to play a part.
Okay, all right. So we have some questions in our chat. So what would disqualify you as being a donor?
Yeah,
Like
so
let's say I'm a donor today because I checked it when I first got my license, and then all of a sudden I became, for instance, diabetic. Does that disqualify me from being a donor going forward?
Yeah, that's such a great question and one that we get often. The answer is very few things would actually disqualify you. So that's why going back to what we talked about early, always check that box. At the end of your life, your health will be evaluated. The only thing that is an automatic disqualifier really is active cancer. If you have diabetes, there are, other things that we could potentially use, certain organs that'll still be healthy enough. So active cancer really is the only one.
Okay. Interesting. All right, Barry. I know you ponder from the medical point of view here. So, what questions do you have? I mean, I know that you've had patients in the past that perhaps were on a list or needed an organ donor. What can you reflect on?
Well, again, the most important thing is the barrier that people have for signing up for this, because unless you have a supply, then it becomes a moot point. And the thing that's been most amazing to me over my arc of practice has been the number of organs that can now be transplanted. I mean, when I started practice, they didn't have lung transplants and heart transplants. I think liver transplants were maybe first starting. And now, for major, body organ systems, heart, lungs, kidneys have, again, is the oldest. I think that's been the thing, is that the need has increased. And especially as the population ages, and we see more of the impacts of chronic disease, it always boils down, if you don't have an organ for a donor, and just getting, having an organ is just the first step, as Susan and Sarah have delineated already for us. It has to be matched. It's a little different. I'm a blood donor. Okay, and only 3% of people donate blood, and part of that, though, is there's a lot of disqualifications for blood donation, as well. But they could take any blood type that you have, but every kidney type doesn't, because of the immunology aspects of it and things like that. So I don't have any particular questions other than, are there strategies that have been successful in some states for getting more people to sign up to be a donor? Because that's the first step. And I think, having the ability to be an organ donor on your fishing and hunting license, that's really good. And I'm sure, like, there are others, but that's actually the question that I have, is what are there states that have been, or other countries even, that have been more successful at getting that community coming together to offer something that, when they're not going to be here anymore, they could actually give life to somebody? Because I think that in the research, what is it, every day 13 people die because there's no organ available for them, and that adds up. So that's sort of the things that I ponder, is how can we get a life-saving treatment to be more widespread and to help more people.
I like to jump in on that one, because as I was sitting here, I was thinking about, we actually had, I do a lot of community work. We actually had a gentleman that needed a kidney that worked with us in the community on many, many, many different projects. And you know, he had close relationships with LifeSource. He had close relationships, you know, around this topic. And he was a great advocate for helping to, you know, as you just talked about, helping to make people more aware of the need for it, you know. And I think that's for us, that was part of the great joy of working with LifeSource, because we were close to the topic. We had people that could were part of the process, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't concerns. Okay, I want to put it out there like that. Not about them, but there are we many times we had to talk to people who were concerned about the process, and we had to address some of those issues. So, in spite of our great intentions, I mean, this is still a very, very emotional, relational kind of topic. And
Yeah.
so, you know, you can do the very, you can do, give people your very, very best, but emotionally, if they don't see it that way, then there's always those challenges. So I just want to say I want to say that is that, you know, there are people who are struggling with this issue, but they're out there trying to let other people know how important it is for us to address this, but it doesn't come without its challenges.
So let me ask you, Sarah or Susan, this. All right, again, I'm trying to put my hat on as if I'm, in the listening audience here a little bit. Okay, so let's say a loved one of mine all of a sudden needs a kidney. Do you ever get this question? How much is this going to cost? I mean, does LifeSource charge us? But I mean, people don't know one way or the other. It's like as soon as you're in need and the process starts, how are costs taken care of?
Yeah, that's a question we do get often. So from the donation end of things, if you're a donor, LifeSource covers all of those costs. So there's no cost to be a donor. From the transplant end, that is where, insurance gets involved and your insurance covers your costs. So, having insurance can be a barrier for certain, potential recipients, and is a big equity issue. But I want to take the opportunity to circle back. Stan, you had asked a really good question earlier and one that we hear a lot and one that, Susan and Clarence have been doing a lot to help address, and that's the doctors won't save my life myth. And I think really understanding more about the donation process helps address that and clear up that myth. So, organ donation is extremely rare. In order to even potentially be an organ donor, you have to die at a hospital on a ventilator. So you can't, if you get in a car accident on the side of the road and you pass away, you can't be an organ donor because you think about it, your organs start to die immediately. They don't have blood and oxygen running through them, so you can't be a donor. So you actually have to make it into the hospital. The hospital team has to be working to do everything they can to save your life, to revitalize your organs and your functioning for you even to potentially be a donor. So, and we have a lot of I talked to a lot of EMS staff, a lot of critical care nurses. And I share this myth with them, and they're like, absolutely, they're like, we understand that concern. However, for a nurse or an EMS, their full focus is saving their patient's life. That is all they care about. That is why they go into the field. That is why they do what they do. They're not digging in your wallet, checking your license to see if you're a donor. It is their personal responsibility and mission to save their patient's life. They don't want to lose a patient and have a patient go on to be a donor. They want to save that patient's life. It's really only, an option after they've done absolutely everything they can. So really, understanding the process that you actually have to be in the hospital on a ventilator to be a donor kind of really debunks that myth. And then just knowing, the Hippocratic Oath and really the focus of the healthcare team is you and you alone. They don't want to call us. They don't want to have to call us because to them, it means they failed.
That's
Think one.
interesting because a lot of people think that, oh my goodness, you're in a car accident, you're in a motorcycle accident because you didn't have a helmet on and they die. They can't become a donor.
I think that statistically, when we look at the research, is about 1% of people.
Correct.
About 1% of people that sign up to be an organ donor, only about 1% of them have
Could
their
be a
organs used.
donor.
Right. So it's really, really rare and just makes that, if you think about it as a funnel, it makes that opportunity to donate and that number of organs available so rare. And that's why it is our mission. Susan and I are so focused on addressing some of these myths and getting as many as many people as possible to register and check that box, because that will make, that potential higher to save more lives. Because it's such, you're truly a hero if you get to be an organ donor, because it is so extremely rare.
Yeah.
And a lot of the families we work with, it provides them so much healing and comfort to know something good came out of their tragedy, and the loss isn't just a loss. The story doesn't end there.
I want to
Eric.
just ask a question that popped into my head, as many questions do, and that is living donors. I mean, one of the things, kidneys are number one, right, for need for organs. We have two kidneys. If I remember my anatomy, we have two kidneys, one heart, one lu two lungs, and one liver. And with kidneys, I know that there are oftentimes stories in the newspapers about living donors who donate a kidney, whether it be to a loved one or in these very convoluted matches, where their kidney, they want to donate a kidney to their friend, but it's not a match. And then they go through, your process, the system, to match things up. But has that, I don't want to say caught on, but has that been increasing, over time in the number of people who are willing to donate, one of their kidneys? Because from a medical perspective, really, one good kidney can get you a pretty long way if you donate a kidney. And then, so I was just wondering, where does that fit into this picture, given the need for kidneys?
That's a great question. Yeah, do you want to take that, Sarah?
Yeah, thanks. And please add on, Susan. But living kidney donation is another great way to address the shortage. LifeSource is really in charge of deceased donation, but anything that helps reduce the wait list, we help promote and support. From what I know, there has been a slight increase in living kidney donation. And I know there's been some legislation that have removed some barriers, allowing people to take off work and still, receive some pay because there is a, significant recovery time. So what would you add, Susan?
No, I think that's exactly right. I think Barry, you also touched on the exchanges, which have been amazing. That's a newer development where, somebody wants to give a kidney to their loved one, they're not a match, so they give it to somebody else, and then, they do this math system, and so lots of people get transplanted. It's an extraordinary development.
So I
Continuing
have
to
a question.
dominoes.
So I have a question about, okay, so you get a kidney. Do you maintain data or statistics on what's the average years gained by getting a kidney? Like, if it's 20 years, do you have to get another one then? Or what, how long typically do people, how many years do they gain by getting that transplant?
Wow, I actually don't know the answer. There is data that does show that. Certainly that's tracked. And I think you mentioned it, somebody having a kidney for 20 years. It's an extraordinary gift. I've met people that have been 40, 45 years out from their transplant. So it is definitely a life-saving gift that, if you remember, whether it's kidney or heart, transplant is only suggested when all other efforts to improve that organ have failed. So the patient's at end stage organ failure and they need that transplant, and the outcomes are just extraordinary.
That'd be interesting to find out. And also, do younger patients, are they able to live longer because of that, as opposed to older patients? I can imagine as an older patient getting an organ, just by being older, you've got other potential complications that you have to look at. But it'd be interesting to find that out. This has been absolutely incredible. Let's go do a round robin here on some last thoughts. So what's the zingers that you really want to get out there and make sure that everybody knows? I'll start with you, Sarah.
Yeah, thanks, Stan. I think the thing I want everyone to hear is that, organ donation and transplantation is such an incredible collective process, like Susan said, the best of humanity. I just encourage people to get their information, to reach out to us, to check reputable sources when finding information. I don't want misinformation and myths to prevent people from participating. And again, my team is out in the community at events, would love to participate in any community events that we're invited to. We're also holding a community gathering at our office in early December. If you want to learn more about organ donation and transplantation, would love to have anyone there that is curious. But don't let those myths prevent you from participating in this process, because it hurts our friends and neighbors, and it will reduce even more people getting that life-saving transplant.
Clarence, your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm glad that we had the opportunity to enter this conversation, because I know that there's been a lot of conversations about organ and tissue donation. And I thought that it was so great to have Susan and Sarah come on and share their perspective as well.
Susan.
Yeah, well, first, thank you. Love this conversation, and we appreciate the opportunity to dive deeper into all of this. And I would say again, LifeSource is so committed every day, and this is what I want people to know, that we really, really are thoughtful and careful in our care for families and in the process, and respecting the hospital's role in taking care of patients and our role in taking care of donations. So really encourage people, get information, say yes to donation, and talk to your family about your donation wishes. That's a really important family conversation.
Dr. Berry.
Well, I think one of the I know that our reach, Stan, for Health Chatter goes beyond the Minnesota borders. That
Yes.
being said, I think we really are blessed with just a top-notch organization with LifeSource for organ donations, and just being a part of that and coordinating that. So thank you, Susan and Sarah. And then the other thing, again, as Stan said, is Clarence said, to really be putting this on the table, keeping it front and center, because there are things that people can do that really can save lives. And again, you could check a box. It's really good. And in my head is that should it be an opt out that, as part of the community of humans, should that just be that, of course, you do it unless you have a reason, not to. So I think keeping the conversations going and certainly addressing the issues that people have, I think, again, more understanding. Hopefully, we'll get more donors, because again, even if everybody says yes, the number of people where organs are available is still relatively small. So, the more we can do, the better. And thank you, both of you, for being on the show.
Well, obviously, thank you. I mean, this is an incredibly important topic. And for most of us, it doesn't become an important topic until it actually becomes an important topic for you. You kind of put it in the back of your mind. So the one thing I've been saying lately around a variety of different health topics, given all the what's been going on around us, is embrace the good. And damn it, this is good. This is really, really good. It saves lives, it helps people, and embrace that. Don't get involved in the riffraff, the political riffraff, because the organs that are in need, or the organs that have discontinued their use, are laughing at us, while we look at all this political riffraff, because they'll continue to do what they do. In this case, what LifeSource does is beyond excellent, and I think we all need to embrace that going forward, for sure, for sure. So thank you, Susan, and thank you, Sarah, for your insights. You are precious colleagues. Going forward, Health Chatter, we're going to be doing some interesting shows. As you can imagine, everything kind of comes up all at once. Recently, there were changes in blood pressure guidelines, and so we're going to be doing a show on that. We're going to be looking at the issues of autism, which is good, bad, or indifferent on the list here. Longevity, you know, one of the questions I have: are we living too long? You know, at what point do we say, okay, enough is enough? Okay, so good topics coming up for all of you in Health Chatter Land. Keep health chatting away.